This is Robert Martellacci, publisher of the Mindshare Learning Report, Canada's leading learning and technology magazine. Our May issue features our special global learning edition, Canada on the Global Stage. We're fortunate to have with us today, for a Mindshare Learning Moment, an EdTech legend and Association of Education Publishers Hall of Famer, Dr. Nelson Heller. Dr. Heller is founder and president of EdNet at MDR, a Dun & Bradstreet company. EdNet publishes a weekly emailed industry news service sponsors the annual EdNet conference, educational networking conference, and offers periodic EdNet virtual roundtables with panels of experts regarding key issues impacting educational sales and marketing. Good afternoon, Nelson, and thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks, Robert, and you're very kind in your introduction.
You've always been a mentor of sorts to me, and I'm inspired by your wonderful work in the U.S. and beyond. And one of the first questions I have for you is you have a significant EdTech industry event coming up this September in Denver. Perhaps you can give us a high-level overview and why should Canadian EdTech firms try to make a point of attending? I certainly try to not miss it annually, and I've always enjoyed your conferences.
Well, thanks. This is our 23rd coming up in September. We had about 550 industry executives from, I would guess, about 300 education industry companies.
It's fantastic.
The largest B2B annual event for our industry. It's predominantly U.S. In attendance, but increasingly international, including people from Canada, the U.K., Europe, South America, Israel, and New Zealand. And for its content, and the two things that I think attract people to the conference and have done over the years are our work with an industry advisory board to help us identify what concerns industry folks have and who they'd like to hear from, and networking. We'd like to joke that after the first conference, we noticed that a lot of people were attending the sessions, but quite a few were also out in the hallways and decided that for future conferences, we probably needed better sessions, but we also needed better hallways.
No kidding. There's certainly a lot of deals that are done in those hallways, I'm sure.
Well, we've built a lot of infrastructure, including the opportunity for every company that participates very early in the conference to do a 30-second elevator pitch about their goals for the conference to the entire audience, and then an online directory that lets people set up appointments with folks, often folks they don't know, for before, during, or after the conference.
That's extremely valuable, I find, absolutely.
Would you like to hear a little bit more about the content for this year?
Yeah, just give us an overview, perhaps, of the keynote and the key themes, perhaps.
Well, let's start with the themes, and one that will resonate, I'm sure, with your audience. One is budget and uncertainty, and what we're looking forward to over the next couple of years and how companies are responding. We also have a group of education executives that we bring in on scholarship. The focus for the discussion with them and within EdNet community, they essentially represent the voice of the customer, will be on common core standards and what that's going to mean for them in their schools.
Right.
We'll also be looking at in what you might call invisible competitors or new players in the marketplace, personalized content, and digital learning. And we've got some breakout sessions, including marketing and customer relationship building, and then our traditional view from the catbird seat, in which we stick our necks out about what we think the most important issues are and trends in the marketplace that companies will be dealing with over the next couple of years.
That's always one of my favorites.
Well, thanks. For keynote, you did ask specifically about that. One of our keynoters is coming to us from the Parthenon Group, which is an international management consulting organization that works with large practice in the education industry, publishing companies in particular. And,
cool.
We're excited about this gentleman's participation because they have a pretty broad perspective across many companies and many markets about what's going on in the education industries.
Excellent. Let's segue on to the next question with regard to the EdTech landscape and how that's changed this past year in the U.S. and how should Canadian and foreign companies be adapting? Do you see more funding for 2011 and 2012?
Well, we've actually focused EdNet on the critical changes that are taking place. So I've mentioned some of the areas that the sessions will be covering. For the school budget situation, it certainly has gotten a lot of press, and we have been really quite pleasantly surprised, but aren't ready to declare victory, that the sky doesn't seem to be falling as far as companies in this industry are concerned. And some of the winning strategies seem to be the ability to demonstrate to the school a return on investment for products and services that are being offered to them, focus on pain points and how the products respond to them, broadening sales to multiple channels, being selective about the sources of funding that can support the purchase of products, and some interesting new things that are happening in moving the business model from a product model, or predominantly a product model, to a product and service model, which creates more of an ongoing partnership with the schools and an ongoing source of revenue.
Interesting.
Area that's the two areas that are generating a great deal of activity, certainly here in the United States, are the Common Core standards and the creation of materials in response to that, and then innovative assessment. Partly as a result of that and the economic situation here, there's been an upswing in the professional development market in areas like school improvement strategies, what the Common Core is about, and more on what you might call digital enterprise systems, broader platforms for helping schools to be more data-driven, both on the sort of administrative side and on the instructional side.
That's interesting. We're seeing that it's at its infancy here. Canada, you know, Global School Scholar just came in. And there's other solutions we're seeing, but it's still at its infancy stage, I would say, here in Canada.
Some other changes in the landscape here, at least ones that are coming to the fore, are more interest in personalized learning, which is an idea that's been around for an awfully long time, back to programmed instruction books, but with schools using or organizations, and I don't know whether you'd be aware of them there, Rocket Ship, School of One, the Boys Academy in Chicago. Do any of those names ring any bells?
Yeah, I've heard of them, yes.
Well, they might be thought of as enterprise-level systems for creating an individualized schedule and instructional experience that's really a blend. It's not just digital. Some of it is face-to-face and group discussion and things of that nature, but managing a blend that is constantly monitoring every student's progress and building a program for each, an individualized program for each one.
Well, the whole notion of blended learning, I mean, I'm a big proponent of that, and that's what I studied, how I studied for my master's in that tech at Pepperdine, and it's extremely powerful learning. It can be if it's done right.
Interesting. Yeah, it's good to know that institutions like Pepperdine are working in that arena. There's also been more interest in social learning, educational games, and open educational resources, and on the marketing side, much more interest of late in social media, market segmentation strategies, and integrating campaigns that would marry digital and web-based sales and marketing resources with print and trade shows and so on.
Fascinating. So we're seeing a trend toward U.S. and Canadian ed tech firms global. Are you seeing this trend, and where do you see the greatest opportunities emerging on an international scale?
Yeah, it's interesting that you should ask about that, because I have taken a personal interest in exploring international opportunities in the education space.
Cool.
I don't know if have you ever been to the BET conference in London?
Absolutely. Well, I was the first to introduce RM to North America, so I had the first pilot. I consulted to them 5 years and bringing them into North America. They settled in the Boston area. So I went to that conference many times, and also spent up in London.
Well, just this past January, I was back at that conference, and it has continued to grow. There was something like 30,000 attendees.
Wow.
Someone told me that 3,000 of them were from Scandinavia, and that was in the context of highlighting Vets' evolution as an international venue for education and educational technology, particularly at the K-12 level. And I'm sure you know Dominic Savage, the
yes.
managing director of BISA, the organization that runs that, and his vision is that the conference is evolving into the Frankfurt Book Fair for educational technology.
And interesting.
Part of this, yeah, is that it's becoming a much flatter world, as Thomas Friedman would put it, for virtual education and for computer hardware. Another force at play here, interestingly, is cutback in education funding in the UK, which has energized companies there to look for even more than they had been for international markets. You mentioned RM. They're certainly operating all over the world.
Promethean
is another one, right? Smart, of course, based in Canada, but selling all over the world. And another related force here is the growth in educational activity in the Middle East, India, China, and Korea, where there are some pretty dramatic demands being put on the education system and some fascinating entrepreneurial initiatives that are taking place there, in addition to the government efforts or in conjunction with the government to respond. In fact, I was at a conference recently where I heard an American businessman is doing business in Korea.
Right.
The particular business in point is live English language instruction and tutoring for Korean students using moonlighting K-12 educators from Montana and Wyoming over Skype and the internet.
Well, that shows definite flat to me. That's incredible.
And add to that that this fellow described the broadband internet infrastructure in Korea as 5G compared to here in the U.S., where we're still trying to get 3G, and there's a little bit of conversation about 4G. So the point is, and we will be looking at this at EdNet as well, there are going to be more international and non-traditional players in our space. It's not going to be just us, those of us who think we're the folks who are competing. You can get a little bit of a flavor for that from the News Corp acquisition of Wireless Generation, or staggering third of $1 billion.
Wow.
Netflix investment in Dreambox Learning, which is a math education.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's sort of built on built on a recommendation engine, which resonates with Netflix movie recommendation capabilities, and even the new Google marketplace, apps marketplace for EDU and iTunes, which I know you all are contributors to iTunes.
Absolutely.
So yes, indeed, the world is going to be much more of a global marketplace, and it behooves U.S. and Canadian funds to firms to look at what's going on outside and to keep their ears to the ground about other companies coming in from outside, which incidentally doesn't have to be all bad.
No, no.
And this is a good
segue into my next question. There's been an acquisition frenzy this past year. Is it good or bad for education? Pearson just announced today, in fact, the acquired school, $240.
Yeah, actually, I heard that from you, so that was a good scoop.
You know, I think I scooped school news and Education Week on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for you. I don't want to seem older than I am, but this sort of consolidation and divestiture has been going on ever since, I guess, I was formally a part of the education industry since about 1979. And the periods of recession and economic stress are oftentimes that the stronger companies will arm themselves with acquisitions that they can afford because of their cash flows, and that may be more advantageous to them because some of the companies they're acquiring may be struggling more than they might otherwise in a different market. But investors are definitely getting interested in the education space. They seem to go through cycles. And about 3 weeks ago, I was at the Education Innovation Summit at Arizona State University, which was a great gathering of investors and financial analysts.
Cool.
And education companies. And they are definitely interested. The bloom on the rose has traditionally been higher education with companies like University of Phoenix and some of the private secondary post-secondary education institutions, but they're getting interested again in K-12 because the secondary ones are sort of plateauing. And they're looking for the next exponential areas of growth. And just to conclude on this good or bad thing for education, I've been fascinated over the years at the continual genesis of new firms that we see at EdNet. So there are lots of new firms coming into the market for companies that are getting acquired. And, in fact, Heller Reports has, you might say, been acquired twice.
Yes.
First by Scholastic, and then that division that I was, we were a part of, by Dun & Bradstreet, and each time it's given us a bigger playing field and more resources and a broader array of products and services to be involved with.
Congratulations on that.
So, so it can be good and. and I find fascinating at some of these meetings, like the ASU one, that our industry includes a number of serial entrepreneurs, as do other industries, but folks who have started companies, grown them, sold them, moved on to other very promising areas in education, built them up, sold them. So it's still a pretty exciting area to be in, and I think you probably share this and you're listening.
Absolutely. You know, it's about path for making a difference. And seeing opportunities and having the business acumen and to building a business and again if you have a right speed for success, I mean, as you know, it's a testament to you and what you accomplished. So you know, any regrets on that note?
Maybe doing some of the things sooner than I did.
There you go. That's you know, as my friend and advisory board peer mentioned that what took 100 years just a decade ago now it happens in 100 days. So it's an accelerator effect. I'm gonna take a pitch from her, Dr. Heller.
The hard part is accelerating the sort of courage and guts and
yes.
Stick-to-itiveness.
Absolutely.
That part hasn't been compressed that much in time.
Well, this is perhaps a nice segue to the next question around the accelerated growth in the whole mobile learning space seems to be hot. You see this being the greatest hope for one computing to occur in the perhaps in the next 2 years. What other technology solutions do you see gaining traction this coming year? As far as mobile learning is concerned,
we seem to be finally turning the corner on the penetration of digital infrastructure, where schools can start to take it seriously. We're hardly anywhere near a level of penetration or saturation where it can be relied on comprehensively. But I don't know how much of this you're seeing up in Canada. The two biggest factors that are evolving here are cloud computing, where products and services are hosted remotely and made available to schools through their broadband connections, and bring your own device, student-owned devices. Are kind of coming out of the closet.
We are definitely seeing those same things up here, most definitely. It brings me back to my ASU days with learning stage. My good things go full circle day.
we're
talking years ago, or.
And ask yourself, well, what's different today than at that time? And part of it is that the technology has become a lot more user-friendly and empowering. Multimedia streaming over the internet instead of local servers and having to the pipe capacity or bandwidth that's available. And another piece that is sort of the understatement of the year is what's going on outside of schools in terms of technology, social media, and online research. And so it's pretty much coming at the school not only from innovative companies and pioneers and champions within the schools, but from outside, both on the part of the educators who are more computer literate and the students' parents, too, for that matter.
Absolutely. We're definitely seeing that pressure being exerted from the outside, you know, and kids, and you alluded to their own device, and there's a tech savviness that didn't exist a dozen years ago. But one of the challenges we see is the quality of education are not necessarily preparing their teachers with the sound understand the pedagogy around learning with technology.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I guess for you at Pepperdine, you were in one of the places that cared. And the schools of education seem to be the sort of bête noire du jour. And I've heard sort of both sides of that argument. But whatever it is, we're behind a curve that we need to get ahead of.
I agree. I mean, still to this day, there's a lot of nervousness around offering e-books and doing away with textbooks because the infrastructure clearly not there to enable that in our Canadian landscape. And so a book publisher holding back. Districts are saying, well, we're not going to buy any books because, you know, well, we want to go digital. And so there's a stop at the OK Corral, you know. So.
Well, I both of us can chuckle about it, but the governance procedures, the purchasing resources, and the risks are real issues on both sides, and that's really the challenge. Schools are taking risks and are risk averse about making changes. The publishers and vendors as well, but I know you're getting to the point where you are going to ask me to wrap up.
And before I do that, I was going to ask you: Are you, I often refer to this period of time that we're in. It's almost reminiscent of the dot-com era, in that you know it's seen a technological revolution. And I don't know if we should blame Jobs and his launch of iPad a year ago that has created a whole new sector and frenzy. I think it's mixed blessings. Would you define it as being a technological revolution? Is 21st century learning a terminology that's passé now? I've been told that I should stop using that term.
I think we're going to be in a technological, an ongoing technological revolution for the rest of civilization. And we're just seeing different aspects of it embodied in different kinds of tools. What a cell phone can do is staggering. Wonderful ease of use of tablets, portability compared to a desktop, certainly, and even a laptop. And that's just going to keep happening. In 21st century learning, yes, we are in the 21st century. Maybe it needs a name that isn't tied to a particular date, but the skills are increasingly necessary for us and for our kids and for future generations in order for our economies and our country to succeed, for economic competitiveness and for social well-being, even for defense. So yes, we're in a revolution. Some exciting things are happening in technology, but it's going to take for education, but it's going to take a whole lot of leadership and confrontation of issues of governance and control in order for us to really do what we're going to have to do. I have three grandkids that I've probably been telling you about.
Yes, of course.
Ranging in age from 14 months to 4 years. And when I step back and think about the world that they're going to be dealing with, the issues of international competition, over not only over trade, but over resources, global warming, for all the scientific evidence that I've seen, population growth, and just this flat world that the internet has created. You don't have to read very far into a newspaper these days to feel that something that happens on the other side of the world can be very much of consequence to us, even though we're 12,000 miles away. So education is really going to be critical, and I think you deserve a lot of credit, and the folks that you're working with up in Canada trying to help be a catalyst by bringing new ideas and insights into issues, technology, business strategy, that can sustain the kinds of educational resources and services that are really very much needed.
Well, thank you for that. Inspired every day to do what we do and make a difference, and that's our economic imperative contributing to Canada's success on the global stage. And thank you for making the time for us this afternoon, Dr. Heller. Was Dr. Nelson Heller at MDR. Be sure to check out Mindshare Learning, www.mindsharelearning.com to get your latest through the Mindshare Learning report. My name is Rod Lachey, and until next time, keep the learning curve steep. It's a wrap.
Hey, very good. Well, we blew through 15 minutes there.